السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على رسوله الكريم. Now, Isa عليه السلام is one of the most mysterious figures in all of history. Some have denounced him completely as a false messiah. They said he was an imposter. He claimed to be a messenger from God, but he was not. They said that he was born by illegitimate means, so they launched an accusation against his mother. These are things that the Quran come to defend Jesus alayhi salam about. In Surah 4, Surah An-Nisa, the Quran defends Isa alayhi salam by speaking about the Buhtan Azima, the great calumny which people launched against his mother. And as for their claim that they killed him and crucified him, the Quran says, مَا قَتَلُوهُ وَمَا صَلَبُوهُ وَلَكِنْ شُبِّهَ لَهُمْ. They killed him not, nor did they crucify him, but it was made so to appear to them. They thought that they were proving Isa alayhi salam to be a false messiah, but Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala was vindicating him in the Quran and showing him to be true. On the other hand, there were some others who tried to follow Isa alayhi salam. They loved him, they revered him, they respected his teachings, but they exaggerated about his personality. They elevated him to the position of divinity. They made him a god. And whereas he himself bowed down and worshipped the one true God, the God of Abraham, of Moses, and his own God, others took him for the God that he spoke about. And they said that somehow God is not only the Father, but also the Son, Jesus, and also the Holy Spirit together. The three somehow make one. Now, in order to protect this later evolving faith in Isa alayhi salam, Gospels and other writings were collected, writings which were more conducive towards this faith. Details about Isa alayhi salam were disputed for many centuries, until eventually the books that make up the New Testament portion of the Bible were collected together. Now, very early, after Isa alayhi salam, some Gospels came to be written, but were not collected in the Bible. We have remnants of two such Gospels now. One is called the Gospel of Thomas, that was written about approximately 20 years after Isa alayhi salam. Another one is called by the German word Quelle, which means source, because we don't know the name of this Gospel, so we just refer to it by the name source, because we German scholars came to first believe that a certain Gospel was used as a source by some later Gospels, which are now written in the New Testament, in the Christian Bible. So that hypothetical Gospel, which the Germans call Quelle, or source, is now referred to, in short, by just simply the letter Q. So we refer to that as the Q Gospel, written around 20 years after Isa alayhi salam had left the scene. But these Gospels, as I've said, did not survive as part of the Christian Bible. Other writings later on would be written and would be collected. Now, the earliest writings that are collected in the Christian Bible are letters written by a certain man by the name Paul. His original name was Saul, and according to the Bible itself, initially he was a persecutor of early Christians. He went from town to town trying to gather them to arrest them and bring them back for trial under the Jewish authorities of the day. In other words, Christianity at the time was not a very favorable religion to practice. It was a dangerous time to be a Christian. And Paul was one of those who was persecuting the early Christians. But according to his own writings, he had a turnaround. Somehow Jesus appeared to him and made him a disciple. And so he, with this new revelation from Jesus, became an ardent follower of Jesus now and a preacher of the Christian message. But before him, there were already disciples of Jesus. There were already followers of Jesus who were preaching their understanding of what Jesus left behind by way of teaching. Now, there were some differences between Paul's teaching on the one hand and the teaching of these other disciples on the other hand. We know this from two sources. One is from Paul's own writings. We see in his writings that he is disputing with other people. He's teaching one thing and some others are teaching another thing. Paul, apparently from his own writings, would go into a certain town. He would teach people his understanding of the gospel. And subsequent to him, some other teachers would come in and teach these people the very opposite turning them away from the teachings of Paul. And then Paul would write them another letter, blasting them for why they have turned away from the gospel that he had given them to another gospel. Now, historians have tried to find out who might be these other persons that Paul is disputing with. And from the manner in which he has written about these other individuals, it would seem that these other individuals were very important early followers of Jesus. Paul refers to them sometimes as super apostles, which means like the Rasulul Uzama, the great apostles, which means the apostles of Isa alayhi salam, his Rasul, his messengers that he sent to various parts. And that would include people like Peter and James and John, some early and very important disciples of Jesus. What this means then is that from the letters of Paul, we can gather that Paul was teaching one thing and the disciples of Jesus were teaching another thing. And it so turns out that it would be the followers of Paul who eventually compile the books that would make up the New Testament portion of the Christian gospel, or of the Christian Bible. That would be that portion of the Christian Bible that deals specifically with Isa alayhi salam, as opposed to that which came before Isa alayhi salam, meaning what is now called the Old Testament. Now, I know some of this may sound complex, but if you have questions about this, I'd be glad to answer these questions after I introduce a few thoughts to you. So here we have one source showing us that Paul was teaching something else, different from the teaching of the original disciples of Jesus. Another such source is also in the Christian Bible. It's in a book called the Acts of the Apostles. You might say these are the Hayat al-Sahaba of the Christians. It's the lives and the teachings of the disciples of Jesus after Jesus had left. Now the first part of that book deals with the original disciples of Jesus. And then the second part of the book switches to Paul. So we can see a certain orientation here. The writer wants to show a continuity between what the original disciples taught and what Paul is now teaching. Paul cannot just come simply out of thin air. He has to rest on the foundations of what went before. And so the writer has carefully constructed his work such that everything that went on before is leading up to the teachings of Paul to establish him as a genuine teacher of the Christian gospel. But despite the efforts of the writer, we can see in the occasions that he describes that there were circumstances when Paul was indeed at loggerheads with the original disciples of Jesus. That there were occasions when he was called upon to prove himself to be true. And in order to prove himself to be true, he had to show that he was still following the Jewish law, just like the disciples of Jesus before him were doing. Now, how do we evaluate this material? How could Paul, in his writings, be saying that you do not need to follow the old Jewish law? And at the same time, now, he comes in the midst of the early followers of Jesus, and he demonstrates that he is still following that law. How could you have it both ways? So there are two solutions to this. One solution is noted in the Black's commentary to the New Testament, in the Acts of the Apostles, where it says that it would indicate here that Paul is acting hypocritical, because he teaches one thing in his letters, and then on the other hand, he is doing something else. Well, the other solution, also noted in the same commentary, is to say that Paul was not acting hypocritically, but in fact, the Acts of the Apostles writer, the writer of this document, trying to show that Paul is in agreement with the disciples, has deliberately reworked the story such as to give the impression that Paul and the original disciples of Jesus are teaching the same thing. In other words, that this document is a piece of propaganda. And this is the term that biblical scholars have used to describe this material, especially in a place like this. And so we have now already in the first century of Christianity disputes as to what exactly did Jesus teach. But there were disputes also about who exactly he was as a person. Because Paul already began elevating Jesus to a status that is far above human beings. For Paul, Jesus was God's agent in creating the world. Now, to understand this, you have to understand the Greek mindset at the time. The Greek philosophers have said that God doesn't deal directly with the world. He deals with the world through an intermediary. They said they have their own reasons for this. They said the world is always changing, God is unchanging, so how can the unchanging God deal with the changing world? They said you cannot throw a brick into the river twice, because by the time you throw the second brick, the river has moved, it has changed, it is not the same river anymore. So this was their thinking about it. They said that God doesn't deal with the world directly, he deals with the world through an agent, through an intermediary. Now, in order to create the world then, God had to create the world through his reason, through his wisdom, through his laws. Paul, in his writings, represents Jesus as that agent of God through which God created everything else. And so he was elevating Jesus higher above human beings. Jesus now becomes the creator of all human beings. Mind you, Paul is not saying that Jesus is God, because for Paul there is only one God, the God whom Jesus himself worshipped. But by speaking of Jesus in this elevated sense, he was setting the stage for a further evolution, and we will describe that shortly. So now there was a dispute as to who Jesus was, because many remembered him to be an ordinary human being. His original Jewish followers will not take him to be in any sense divine. They knew him to be a servant and the messenger of God. So here was another area of dispute. Who exactly was Jesus? Now these areas of dispute will continue for a while. There was, on the one hand, some Christian followers who continued to abide by the Jewish law. They worshiped three times a day in the Jewish temples. They prayed to the one true God. They continued to abide by the Jewish Sabbath and so on. They considered Jesus to be a man, a prophet, a servant, and messenger of God. On the other hand, you have followers of Paul who discarded the law. Instead of keeping the Sabbath on Saturday, they switched to Sunday. They called that the day of the Lord. But in fact, they adopted that day because that day was already a popular day in ancient Greek culture. It was the day of the sun, Sunday. It was the day when people worshipped the sun. It was already a day of holiday. And so some early Christians would adopt that and now give it a later meaning, that this is the day that Jesus rose from the dead. The Bible does not actually say that Jesus rose from the dead on the Sunday. It only says that his tomb was discovered empty on the Sunday. And it could be that he actually was already raised on the Saturday night. So there's no logical reason for picking Sunday as a specific Christian holiday, but eventually it was taken to be a holiday. The followers of Paul would discard all of the Jewish regulations in a wholesale fashion, and then eventually wonder, but do we not still have to keep the Ten Commandments? And some think you do, but one of the Ten Commandments is you have to keep the Sabbath, which they don't. So it becomes very confusing. But nevertheless, it's easy for people to think of following Paul, because you do not have to be circumcised, you can just carry on, you don't have to distinguish between kosher and non-kosher foods, you can eat anything that is sold, and so on. That became then the popular religion known as Christianity. Moreover, in the Greek culture, it was easy to take a human being for God. And if anyone was important, he was either the son of God or God himself. So Caesar, for his importance, had to be the son of God. And if you wanted to tell people that Jesus was something special, you had to tell them that Jesus was the son of God, at least, to make sense to them. And so this became easily the popular Christian preaching. Now, the original disciples of Jesus, with their preaching, could not make headway, and their preaching lasted only for a few centuries, eventually to die out before the advent of Islam. In fact, some researchers think that Islam is, in a way, a restatement of the early Christian belief about Jesus. And this point was, in fact, specifically noted in the New Jerome Biblical Commentary, as it commented on Matthew chapter 5, verses number 17 to 21. Now, on the other hand, you have the followers of Paul. Now, over time, they would write their own recollection of what Jesus was about. So Gospels came to be written after the letters of Paul. Paul was writing in the decade between the years 50 to 60 of the first century of the Christian era, which would mean about 20 years after Isa alayhi salam had already left the scene. Add another 20 years, we have the Gospel according to Mark. You're welcome, Brother Sabri. Please come on up. So you have the Gospel according to Mark written around 40 years after Isa alayhi salam. Did I not say that there were two other Gospels written which we now know something about. One is the Gospel of Thomas that was written before Mark. The other was the Q Gospel written also before Mark, but now we can only discover them in hindsight. Now we have the Gospels in the New Testament to deal with. We have Mark, the first one. And then we add another 15 years, we have two other Gospels, the Gospels of Matthew and Luke. And another 10 years, you have the Gospel according to John. You have four Gospels. So roughly then, they are written around the year 70, around the year 85, and around the year 100. So 40 years after Jesus, 60 years after Jesus. Between 40 to 60 years after Jesus, you have four Gospels compiled. Now in that period of time, people had to, of course, remember what Jesus said and pass that on by word of mouth for the large part. As I said, some Gospels were written, but these were mediocre Gospels, both the Gospel of Thomas and the Q Gospel. The Gospels which are compiled in the New Testament from the party of Paul, if I use that term, are the Gospels which are more extensive and give you a kind of a narrative framework. It tells you something about where Jesus was born, what he did during his life, how he eventually left the scene. They start with the birth, generally, and they end with the crucifixion. And then there is some recollection about what happened after Jesus. Some other material were written also that were compiled into the New Testament. I've spoken about Acts of the Apostles, which is like the Hayat al-Sahaba. That was written also within the first century of Christianity, towards the end of the first century, and collected in this book called the Holy Bible. So now with these documents now being written, eventually one could not be sure which written material deserves to be included in the Bible and which does not deserve inclusion. By way of cross-reference, you can note that the Quran was something that was known to the early Muslim community. People had memorized the Quran. And when it came time to write down the Quran, it was a simple matter to collect it from the written materials that were available and from the memories of those who had memorized the Quran. People had a clear understanding of where the Quran began and where it ended and what came in between. Even if some individuals were not sure about certain smaller points, but generally the community knew that this is what makes up the book called the Glorious Quran. In the case of the Christian Bible, one did not have a list of chapters and books to begin with. One had to now feel one's way around. Eventually, the Christian scholars would have to ask, which of these various documents that are floating about were written by the earliest Christian community, even by original disciples of Jesus? Let's include those. Now, by the time they were thinking about this, one could not be sure which was written by whom. There are documents which claim to be written by a certain individual, but today we know from firm evidence that that individual could not have written this document. These are called pseudonymous works, or things which are written in the name of a person, but which are falsely so named. But they're included. So Christian scholars had to use their judgment in deciding which materials to include and which ones not to include. So they used certain criteria. If the material was said to be